And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So
we're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because like I'm heartbroken.
All right, you're welcome along to the GAAR Hurling Show. Some great stuff coming up on today's show. We hear from Shane Dowling and Limerick's disappointing year. Austin Gleeson talks to us about sideline cuts. And we'll talk to Kevin O'Donovan, the man making headlines for distributing a report to arrest the slide of Cork hurling. With me today are Mikey, as usual, and making his GAAR debut, Conal Keeney. Welcome, lads.
How you doing, buddy?
Conal, we could have had you in as a football pundit, but you made the jump from football to the hurling in end of 2010. Not the best timing in the world, as it turns out.
And maybe not the best time for the football, but
yeah, you won the league in the hurling.
We did well in the hurling, yeah, and I think it was something I was always going to do anyway. And at the time, 2009, when Daly came in, you know, I met him three or four times, and I was nearly going every year, except at the time Pat Gilroy was telling me to hold on, and I just felt I was being held every year, you know, and I wanted to go at some stage and give the hurling a few good years that I had left. So I made the decision, and look, I don't regret it. Things happen, and that's the way it goes. And you know, I was wishing the lads on when they were in the final.
Really?
Absolutely, yeah.
It's tough though. I'll give you an example. I left Portlaoise to play with Parnells, and the very first year I left, they won the Leinster Club, and I'm not going to lie, I was heartbroken. I was actually heartbroken. No woman ever made me feel like this. I couldn't sleep that night.
Well, maybe we were the problem then, was it? No, I wouldn't. I was watching the game, and it was very nerve-wracking, and Stephen to get the point at the end, it was great.
Yeah.
You know, we had a relatively successful year with the hurlers, and really enjoyed my time under Anthony Daly. You know, what a man to be playing under.
Yeah, sensational. Are you of the mind that you can't do both?
No, I think you can do both. Sure, isn't Podge Collins doing it at the minute?
Yeah, well,
it's very difficult to do both.
It's gone away from that though. I've never been Jewel, but I was thinking it's actually not the worst deal that you get to play matches all the time instead of really training.
Yeah, well, at the time when I was, that's maybe 2003, 2004, I kind of mixed both of them, and a lot of things have to be in your favour. You have to be young. You have to probably be in college or maybe a teacher with a lot of time off to recover and rest. You have to have managers that want you to play both. And will facilitate you in what you're doing, because you can't overtrain, but you certainly need to be there. It's really to be there to know what's happening. And I think more importantly, you need to be just a little bit favouring the hurling to keep your touch in, because it's easy enough to go back playing football, but hurling, if your eye isn't there and your touch isn't there, you can lose it in a week or two, no problem, you know. And then you get found out on the big days then, and then everyone says, oh, you can't do both. And
that's the problem. I was just going to say that one bad game if you're a dual player in either code, and suddenly you can't do, this is impossible, you know, whereas like players just have bad games one if you're playing either one way or another.
Yeah, I think so. And look, if you have the two managers happy to have you there, that's the biggest thing, you know. If they're willing to go training without you, you know, and you'd be there maybe the Thursday before the game, that's no problem. And exactly your point. So look at Aidan Walsh for Cork. He was flying, and then he had one bad game near the end of the season. Everyone says you can't do it. He's too tired.
And Aidan actually admitted he couldn't do both. And I was just like, you know, when other dual players hear Aidan saying that, it's like, Aidan, don't say that. Don't discourage others from doing it.
Listeners to the podcast will be delighted to hear you say this is a dedicated hurling podcast. They'll be loving the fact you're saying no, hurling requires more training than football. You know. Like that?
Well, it mightn't require as much fitness hurling, but it certainly requires a lot more time with touch, and you need to be at it all the time. It's just not a game. I think football, you could probably, you know, maybe miss a week or two, and you're relatively okay. You'll get through it, because it's not as much skill based, I would say, than hurling would be. You know,
do you get into a groove? Can you say you have two or three hurling matches in a row, just the way the schedule falls? Then you go back to football, and you're like, "What am I doing here?" Or vice versa. Or can you flick between the two easily enough as long as you're keeping yourself ticking over?
I would say, even at the minute, you know, now that I'm not playing at the county, I'm playing a lot of club football and hurling. And every week it's hurling. Next week it's football, hurling, football, hurling, football. And there's about four or five of us that do it. And I think it's the best thing ever, because first of all, you're missing all the heavy training with each other. And then you're just playing games, and you're playing the sports that you love to play. And albeit you're just doing a little bit of hurling on the side as well, but I think it's great. And you feel fresh. It's something new. Like when you're playing hurling all the time, or football, like when we were with the hurlers or footballers in the county, you're just loving to go back to your club and play something different, you know. And look, it's hard to really call, but I think it's an individual thing. If you really want to do it, you can do it. But a lot of things have to fall in your favour.
Portlaoise would be a dual club as well, and you see fellas that are playing both. And that's what I said to you earlier. It's a great deal altogether, because you're not on the off weeks, you're not having to do the training. You're with the other team preparing for something you're looking forward to. You know what I mean? And it's constantly doing the enjoyable part.
Yeah, but on the other side of it, you have to be at a certain level of fitness to be able to do all that. You're not going to be able to be totally unfit and just fit in between both of them. But I think that the dual players, especially we would have at the club, would be the likes of myself and Stephen Heine and Stephen O'Connor and, you know, Simon Lambert. Lads that are always kind of keeping themselves in good nick anyway. And obviously the big thing with the dual thing is staying injury free. That's the key thing, you know.
But yeah.
Look, it's not impossible. It's very hard, but it's not impossible. I think Podge had a busy weekend last weekend, which is very tough to be playing.
That's tough, on the same weekend. Yeah,
replays and voided results are kind of a problem for a dual player, because then with the qualifiers the way they are, if you have a replay, or in the case of the Leash Armagh game, which pushed everything on as well, why he ended up having a 17-hour turnaround. So you're very reliant on the schedule, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose it helps that his dad is the manager as well.
So. Yeah, he didn't start him. He only brought him on as a sub of the footballer. So maybe that's looking after him in a different way. I'd still be kind of not talking to my father for a while if he wasn't. Listen, Conan, we're glad we have you in here, because it's been nearly 2 weeks now since Dublin exited the championship, and it's been a pretty poor year, you know, by Dublin standards, you know. And I want to read out a tweet that you sent out. It was on the 11th of June, not too long ago. It was after the Kilkenny match.
Yep.
Yeah. Tactical shambles tonight. Dublin need all their best players playing to compete. Change needed. Hashtag change needed. Hashtags Dublin are better than this. Tactical shambles.
Yeah, look. To be fair, I was away on holidays at the time, and I watched the game in a bar full of Dublin supporters. I couldn't believe how many Dublin supporters were there, all kids, really enthusiastic, going to the game, really looking forward to it. Everyone was thinking Dublin are going to put it up to them, you know, but it just totally fell apart in the second half. And I was probably so upset.
Beers on board as well.
Well, I don't know about that, but
you were on holiday.
A lot has been made out of it, but the way I look at that is I wasn't telling any lies, you know.
Yeah.
I just said what I seen, and tactically we were all over the place.
In what way?
Well, I think if you look at a lot of the league games since Jair has come in, primarily really he's trying to push this game, a short game, all the time with Dublin hurling. And okay, it works at times, but I think majority of the time the way Dublin play best is get the ball and get it as far away as from your own goal as possible, and get it into the full forward line and have good lads in there that can battle away for it.
Yeah.
And I think under Daly, that was nearly our thing. You know, if it was Gary in goal, whoever it was, puck it long, let the half forwards try and battle for it. And then, you know, if it breaks down, it breaks down, but at least we can regroup. But at the minute, you know, you're hitting a short puck out to maybe the 21-yard line, not 100% sure if this fella can get his first touch right. If he fumbles it, you're under serious pressure then. You know?
Do you think you don't have the players to play that style?
No.
It's kind of copying a Clare style, maybe, that, you know, they're used to it more.
I would say that it's... I'd say it's probably Jair's philosophy on hurling to play it short, keep possession.
Bit like Cork in 04, 05.
And it looks great when it works. No more than Waterford, it looks great when it works. But it's too easy to break down, I think, especially if... My big worry was, and I said it before the Wexford game, it didn't happen, but it happened against Kilkenny. If you push up on the short puck outs, what happens? You know, if there's no free man, a corner back or a full back to hit it to, you know, what do you do? All year you've been preaching the same thing, short puck outs. And then when it comes to the crunch time of the year, and the most important 5 minutes of the game where it's in the balance and you have to go long, everyone's like, well, what are we doing going long? You know, and we haven't talked about it. Okay, we might have talked about it, but and when it comes down to the actual doing of it, nobody knows what to do. You're poking it to a lad that's so used to trying to get a short one or trying to get the ball off a half back line or a full back line that he's not sure what to do when the ball comes in the air, you know?
There's confusion in there.
There's a little bit of confusion. I suppose if you go back to when I was there, we played Galway. We drew with Galway in Leinster final, and they absolutely tore us apart in Tullamore.
Yeah.
You know,
you should have beaten them the first day.
But look, that happens. But, you know, in Tullamore, I remember there was a huge breeze going down the field, and we lost the toss, and they had the breeze. And we were thinking, surely at this stage, I was actually wing back at the time. So I said, surely we're going to bring a man back here, because this is like we're opening ourselves up here, because the puck is going to come straight down top of us and we're running under pressure. But no, stick with what we're doing. This is the game plan we've worked on since January. But did we not think that the conditions come into it, like, you know?
Yeah. We talk about that in the football podcast with Barry Cal last Monday and today, that he said under Pillar Caffrey, if it was a wet day or a windy day, that they might have a big man full forward. But if they had, were against the wind in the first half, they might bring Sennan Connell, for example, in there and play him as a utility full forward. You were around at that time, you know, and that's clever management.
Well, I think you just have to play it as you see it an awful lot of times. It's fine having game plans stuck up on walls and three or four different ways of playing. But on the day of a game, you have to look and say, well, if these are the conditions, I think we need to just maybe get the ball straight into a fella in full forward or whatever it is, but let's not mess around because of the conditions or whatever the case may be.
Is that where the result against Wexford came from then? Because it was a filthy night. It was there in Croke Park. It was horrible. It wasn't a night for short hurling. So Dublin probably played a bit more direct and they tore Wexford to shreds playing slightly more direct.
Well, I think that game was more down to Wexford having so many lads that injured. Probably the early few scores that Dublin got kind of killed Wexford off and they just more or less nearly lost interest. But when they have all the lads back and regroup, sure, look where they are now. I think that day, you can't really read into that too much, you know. And maybe that gave Dublin a false hope that maybe this game plan does work. Because if you remember that night, Conor Dooley's puckouts were absolutely pinpoint perfect, hitting everyone that needs to be hit. But were they being marked as tight as the Kilkennywards were going to mark them? Like, realistically, no. So that game plan was still, you know, but it's broken down a few times. But look, it does work, but it can't be your only game plan. You have to be able to mix it up a bit.
You saw Waterford had an off day against Tipperary. Tipperary found a way to work around Waterford's tactics and it just made Waterford look like a terrible hurling team. And really, it was just the case of Tipperary just didn't allow them to hurl.
Yeah, well, in that case, if you don't, you know, if you have one bad game, that your whole game plan can look absolutely a shambles then, you know. But if one person breaks it down, if you're not working hard enough, you know, we're so reliant on everyone else.
What's morale like in there?
Well, when I was there, it was probably mixed, you know. There's younger lads there, happy to be there, and great hurlers. And then there's other lads probably have been there for a long period of time under Anthony Daly and have everything so professional. You know, you knew exactly where you were, you knew exactly where you stood. I think this time, it's a little bit up in the air, you know.
Okay.
I think Jair is probably learning as he goes, to be fair, as well.
He had a tough job coming in after Anthony Daly, we'd point out straight away. But, like, I mean, reading between the lines from what you're saying, you know, the setup just isn't what it was maybe under Daly.
Yeah, no, that, like, every setup has to change. Everything has to change. And I totally agree with that. And I expressed my opinion to Jair so many times, like, that we need to move and get the younger lads playing. But, you know, there's a fine line between, right, let's get rid of all the lads that were there with Daly and let's go with younger lads. That's fine, you can try that, but you need to have a balance, I think.
Of
and throwing younger lads into it, you're just leaving it a little bit open for what happens if it goes wrong. You know, these lads are only 19, 20. You don't want to be scarring them for the rest of their career if they get an awful beating a few times. But look, I suppose overall you could probably say it's been an average enough year.
It's been a very poor year. Last year you would say it wasn't too bad. You know, you nearly beat Galway, you beat Limerick, you beat Laois, not saying that's anything great, but you weren't hammered by Waterford. This year has been a bit of a disaster.
Yeah, I suppose it has, but I suppose to look at the players that Dublin have lost, you know. You know, I think Dublin is probably a county that need every single person that they can, you know, that's anywhere near the level to play into county, to play with Dublin.
Yeah.
And if you don't have your five or six or whatever it is, key guys playing and injury free, you're under a bit of pressure. Like,
the thing about that as well with the older fellas, in my experience, is if you're a manager that's, you know, unsure or trying to implement something that doesn't really work, it's the older fellas that have years of experience that are opinionated. You know, you're kind of afraid of those lads, whereas the younger lads you can bring in, they'll listen to what you're saying, whereas you might be challenged with some of the other fellas. So it's like, get rid of anybody that's going to challenge me and let's get a panel that's kind of, you know, working more with me.
Yeah, like, I can see where you're coming from with that. Like, there is an element of that to it as well, but I suppose from a management point of view, you know, these lads have been there a while, you need to move things on. But on the other side of it, you know, I suppose we started the first meeting, I remember, with that management committee. It was the most professional thing I've ever seen.
Right.
You know, they're all wearing lovely Dublin tracksuits, all lined up, all give us a presentation on what they're going to do for the year. And it was just like, oh my God, this is light years ahead of what we're at. Because, like, we were like, Daly wouldn't even know how to turn on a laptop. Never mind give a presentation like this. But, and so we were all ready to go. But then just every couple of months, something happened. You know, we lost Tommy Dunn, you know, because he was going back to college.
And was he really good in there? He was,
Tommy Dunn is
as a coach,
probably one of the best hurling coaches I think I've ever worked with.
Right.
And he got on with all the players so well. He just knew us as a group really well. And to lose him was a huge blow,
right,
for whatever reason it was. But we were given the college reason, which was disappointing.
Then, was he replaced then with some other coach, or did Ger try to get be more hands-on then?
We were talking, look, there was no hurling coach put in at that stage, and then Ed Coughlin was involved with us at the time, and then for skills coach, he was supposed to be doing stuff outside of it, you know, one-to-one stuff, you know, which is a little bit alternative, but, you know, I found anything different is definitely worth trying, and some of the stuff he had you doing was crazy, but, like, you have to open your mind to it, and I think at the end, we were nearly coming around to it, you know, but he was made the hurling coach then, and I think it was a slot for him that wasn't really suited for him, you know, he wasn't comfortable in doing the hurling drills.
Right.
You know, and I think ultimately, you know, he was probably nearly blamed then for that bad year we had, and he was got rid of it. Then with Shea Boland left and Garrod Arena left, and, you know, a lot of people had left after the first year.
It's not,
you know,
good. It's not a good sign.
Well, I'm just telling the facts.
Yeah.
I'm not telling anything that nobody doesn't know, you know, but
yeah.
Sometimes I think you just need to step back and look at all the people that we lost and say, was that the right thing for Dublin Hurling? I'm not sure it was, but that's the way it is, and we have to move on, and I totally understand that, you know, what you did last year or what we did in 2013 wasn't good enough. You need to keep moving on and keep developing players. Understand that 100%.
How difficult a job would it be for any manager to come in after Anthony Daly? Because, you know, is there a team in Gaelic games that's more recognisably, you know, it was Dalo's team, you know, he really did kind of, you know, he put his stamp on it, and it was clear he really had you all playing for him. Would that have been a very difficult, was he a difficult act to follow?
Yeah, but let's not forget, Daly was very good for us, and we had a relatively good, successful days, but we also had some terrible days, you know. We had some absolute hidings from Kilkenny and from other teams around, but I suppose that's all I've nearly forgotten about before the little bit of success we had. But in saying that, I think he just knew how to deal with people, you know. He was a real people person, and he could keep everyone kind of on their toes as well as keeping them happy, and a real hurling man that believed in Dublin and really thought that Dublin were going to win the All-Ireland. Every time you talked to him, you know, if you were coming to train a little bit down, he'd be like, this is it, this is the year. Jesus, this is it, I can feel it. And you're yeah. like, well, Jesus, he's saying that. Maybe it's true, you know. So it was loads of little things like that, yeah. that made him so special. But look, a different style, different man, different total different mentality from a different manager now, you know.
Yeah, getting back to Gerard's beginning, you know, you're obviously impressed with his first meeting. Just from me looking in from the outside, you know, you beat Tipperary and Kilkenny in his first two league games, and he wanted to put his own stamp on the team. You know, you went to wing back, Michael Carton went to full back for a game, Rush went up to full forward, Eamon Dillon, kind of, who was not a regular under Dalo, kind of came in at centre half forward. You sucked Cliff into midfield, you know, although he might have played a little bit there. And you had these two great, I was thinking, just Ger Cunningham, you know, is some sort of a genius here. But by the time the year ended, you were all back in your positions nearly where, you know, you had been under Anthony Daly. So it was almost like, try this. It's not really working. Then I'm not really sure what to do here.
Yeah, look, I think any manager that would come in would always try and change things, you know. You know, putting Rushy up full forward worked, and it didn't work. You know, it's very hard to know. Probably putting me wing back was a nightmare altogether. But
you didn't need to be chasing someone at that time.
No, I didn't care. Like, at the time when Ger asked me to go back in the backs, I said no problem. Like, I'm willing to play anywhere. I don't care whether I play full forward, half forward, centre back. You know, I probably had maybe a question over full back, but I don't mind anywhere really. You know. But like a new manager coming in is going to change things. He's going to try and change. See, can he get better positions for the players that he has? And, you know, obviously we were getting a year older, so he was trying to work on things, and look, he tried, it didn't work maybe, but you know, fair play to him for trying it.
Yeah, looking in, okay, Sutcliffe didn't play this year, you know, you retired, you have Nolan coming out publicly saying that he's very disappointed the way he was treated, you have Carton coming out being, you know, critical as well. Like, is Ger Cunningham better off to walk away at this stage, do you think, for the good of Dublin Hurling, or do you think he'll stay on for a third year?
Well, I think he's down for another year anyway, and I think the Dublin County Board are a board that don't sack managers, you know, and I think they always say that after every management team that's there, that they won't sack anyone. So, look, it's up to Ger whether he feels that
Manchester United were like that at one time, too.
Yeah, look, it's up to Ger. Look, if he feels that he can get something out of this group going again next year, or, you know, whether he feels it was a relatively successful year, that's his own opinion. You know, I kind of tell you what he's going to do.
Yeah, do you think he should, though?
I think he could stay on if he gets everyone back on board, and, you know, you have to have everyone, like, there's no doubt in that, and... whether he's going to do that or not, I would really question it, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure.
Who's everyone? Who left would come back?
Well, obviously we have Danny, first of all, whether he'll come back, I don't know. Yeah. Whether he's going to hurl again, sure, who knows? Danny's an enigma himself, you know. Mm. But look, there's loads of other younger lads that you wouldn't even know that were good lads, you know, and just need to be kind of nurtured a little bit to bring on. Look, I don't know. Jerry had his team set up and he wants to play a certain style. He wants to get players to play that certain way, and that's the way it is. So whether he feels he's something to give Dublin again next year, that's up to himself to make that decision.
All right, we'll leave the grilling for
he's
now.
Sweating
here. All right, up next we're going to talk to Kevin O'Donovan. Following two disappointing seasons from the Cork Hurlers, on Tuesday night at Cork County Board meeting, coaching officer Kevin O'Donovan went in and handed out a report. The report featured 25 proposals to arrest the decline of hurling and football in the county, and he handed these out to the club delegates at the meeting. We have Kevin on the line. Kevin, why did you take that very public action?
I suppose, Colm, it's part of a process, really, in that I would have voiced concerns over the last 18 months in my role as coach officer on the board. I voiced them mainly privately at executive and then would have spoke on various occasions at different meetings. But I would have expressed real concern after a Tipperary match. I thought that was a kind of a real turning point, and that's when the Cork public almost gave up on Cork teams. I could feel it on the ground afterwards. So I spoke at that meeting. Haven't made much progress since. I had intended distributing the document during the meeting, but the meeting was suspended in terms of standing orders because of the death of a previous officer, Jim Forbes. Our next meeting is still a month away. There was no discussion, so I had only one route then, which was to stand at the back of the room at the end of the meeting and hand out the document to delegates as they left. So okay. That's where we are.
How has it been received from the county board?
From the county board, there has been no response until this morning, and I just spoke to the chairman now, and I'm meeting him and two officers in the morning, but generally speaking, no response, and huge response then from grassroots. There's been a torrent of calls and emails and text messages since then. There's huge hunger for action out there.
Okay, because am I right in saying this report is very similar to a game report submitted by a games focus group, which was actually up for discussion in September or October?
That would be playing with the facts a little bit, because I was 18 months ago there was a strategic review committee set up to come up with a plan. So 18 months there has been very little progress, but I was on the steering group, so went away, formed a focus group, put on some heavy hitters like Conor Coon and John Allen and others. Yeah. On it. We went to huge work all through the winter. We had 12 consultation meetings with clubs, officers, every single person involved in coaching games across the county, and we produced a report, we submitted it to the steering group, and I'm on the steering group, and I don't have faith that the steering group will critically analyse the proposals and pass many of them, even though I'm on it, because it's mainly made up of board officers. So those ideas are common, but that submission would maybe have out about 14 proposals, and maybe half of the 25 proposals would have been in there. But I've lost faith in that procedure. So now I say, put it to the clubs. Let people see what content is there, and we'll discuss it. I would say it's a bit convenient for people to say that, oh, this process is going to happen. If it takes 18 months for a strategic review committee to come out with a report, I think you're in trouble then.
Yeah, the concern I would have about it, knowing, you know, Cork County Board, whether you're, you know, maybe it's frustration at this stage that it's been dragging on so long, but, you know, handing out the report to club delegates in front of the county board, Frank, it might not go down too well with them. it might actually hinder your, you know, your want for change and your want for having them on board.
Yeah, it certainly won't hinder it, because I'd say you'd have noted yourself how much change there has been in Cork GAA over the last 40 years. So, like, you're joking me if you're saying that I'm going to prevent change. I see your point, but sometimes when you're forced, when official channels aren't working, you have to go through new channels. Now, it's hardly a real act of rebellion to go to clubs. So that's how county boards should be functioning. I'm just maybe cutting through the bureaucracy to get to those clubs. Handing a report to delegates would be hardly anti-democratic or hardly going outside the table. But
county boards love bureaucracy.
Well, it's very convenient. You form subcommittees, and subcommittees is where good ideas go to die. So it's a very handy process to form as many layers as you can, and you don't get changed. Now, you don't need me lecturing you on that. I've heard you speak about inter-county championships and so on previously. Yeah. So it's a GA democracy is, I'd put inverted commas around the democracy part.
Yeah, we'll get to the report in a minute. Just before we do, how bad is the situation in Cork? Because I'm doing a bit of reading on it, and you know, they've started working on the development underage programmes, and they're doing really, really well. You know, 2 years ago you won a Munster senior title. A lot of those players are still involved. How much of this senior issue is down to maybe potentially poor management, and you know, you've got your underage programme working? Is it as bad as it's being made out to be?
Their system's failure. So the whole package isn't working. You've three levels at which a player plays. He's a child, a youth, or an adult. He plays in three places, either a club, a school, or a county. So you've nine areas there in which you have to provide regular meaningful games, and you have to provide top-class coaching. Really simple if you look at it in those structures. I would say we might be ticking one or two of those boxes, but I would say Kerry, Kilkenny, Dublin, Tipperary are probably ticking seven or eight of those boxes. So yeah, it's a real indicator of decline then. If you look at the development squads, I was over them for the last 4 years myself. That was my role. I was appointed following a review 4 years ago to oversee them. And yeah, we've improved the organisation, and then we got in good coaches, and they've been successful. But that's one of the nine boxes. If you think training Cork under 14s and 15s is going to solve your problems, if you don't have primary school coaching, if you don't have good secondary school teams, if your inter-county setup is dysfunctional, if you have, you know, if you're not supporting your universities, if you don't have regular meaningful games in your clubs. So development squads are one piece of a nine-piece jigsaw. So you're in Kilkenny, have a brilliant system because they work at all levels. Kerry, good clubs, good schools, good county. We're dysfunctional. We have systems failure.
How you doing, Kevin? Mikey here.
Hi, Mikey.
One of the main pillars of your one of the 25 proposals is two full-time directors. Another is a full-time head of physical development, and then you're looking at a full-time fixture planner for underage, and then another scheme is looking for free hurls and helmets for kids. This looks like a very expensive plan.
Yeah, it is. But put it in the context of Cork being the largest GA county body in the country. Okay, so you need that context for a start. Now, that size is really challenging for us because we've large urban clubs and we've very small rural clubs, and it's very hard to get a county model to fit both. But we do have size. Sometimes size is a disadvantage, but come on, it must be an advantage in certain ways. So Cork is also an industrial hub, second to Dublin only in the country. So there's huge avenues for corporate fundraising out there, I think. But because of our image, they won't touch us at the moment. Okay, I think they would for specific projects. If you ring fence money, put it into areas like city hurling, like development squads, like primary school coaching, I think they'll come forward. I'd say a couple of points on that.
No, sorry, when you say because of your image, what do you mean?
What image comes into your head when people say Cork County Board? You tell me, like, you know, let's be honest about this now. I'm not creating any image of this board, or I didn't invent this one that we have a negative image, but every time I hear Cork County Board, it's usually in a negative context, and I'm a member, so I don't take it kindly at times, but I have to recognise it.
Can I
finish on the finance one? Because that's
sorry.
The crux, and I had hoped to speak of that in the board meeting. I didn't want to bring finance into the report because then you would start cutting corners left, right and centre. You've got to put an idea first, and then you look, is it possible financially? First of all, any proposal here has to be passed by clubs first, so they're not getting it unless they want it. And number two, there's major room for savings in terms of how we're doing things. If you looked at strength and conditioning, we have several different practitioners involved with several different teams, so there's coordination could make savings there. Number two, the corporate support, which we can't generate because I think there's an image problem. Number three, I think if you had a successful program and winning county teams and proper club championships, you'd have increased gates, and you a successful model would generate revenue. And number four, remember, there seems to be negative connotations towards the building of Parky Keefe. People are unhappy, but it's going ahead and it will be built. Surely that will be a significant generator of revenue. And you think of concerts and you think of inter-county matches and so on. It had better be, to be honest, considering the investment. So there are four avenues that I think you could fund a number of these projects, but these projects will not be put in place unless clubs are happy, and clubs will not be happy unless they're funded first. So that will be part of the process.
Do you think it's the perceived image problem of the Cork County Board is one of the reasons why Cork doesn't have a supporters club? As you said, it's one of the most recognisable brands in the GAA, and it seems bizarre that you don't have a supporters club.
Exactly. And when I talk about the corporate side, I would see that as part of the supporters club. I put the corporate and then, you know, the rebel army, as we call them, into the one body. Yeah, absolutely. Like, I would say that about the 25 proposals. This is hardly revolutionary stuff when you break it down. Most of this is standard practice in other counties. Babs Keating set up the supporters club 30 years ago. So for me to say, here's the revolution in Cork, we're doing one now, and say the Tipperary lads are, must be laughing up their sleeve. But that's where we are. And yes, your point is right. But who stopped it, or why doesn't it happen? So there's this inertia in the county, and that we had the strikes, we had the row, but now we're like the family at home, sitting at the table. We don't fight anymore, but we don't talk and we don't get on. So we're post-war, but the war is still on.
When you look then, looking at another arm of the of your plan, is the player development programs for 18 to 25. Is that not what under 21 hurling is for? Should a hurler not come out from the under 21 grade knowing what it is to be a Cork hurler and playing a Cork style of hurling?
Yeah, he should. He should. But again, our model isn't working. It doesn't seem to be happening here. This happens in other counties. But so we need a new approach to it. What I would say about it is there is a large scale issue in Cork, and that you know you have so many different personalities, and particularly in hurling, you have a lot of strong personalities. So sometimes they don't work as well together as they should. I would see the director of hurling of coordinating all those teams, appointing head coaches then, reduce the cult of the manager. I know you'd say I'm creating a cult of a director of hurling, but at least that person is accountable, more accountable to the board in terms of reference. And unless you have one person linking all those together, it doesn't work. Now, Kilkenny don't need one because they have Brian Cody and Ned Quinn, and they have a system that's working. Kerry don't need one because they're making good appointments and people are working together. We do need one. And we would have Tipperary, for example, have the same management people over under 21 hurling and their intermediate team. So huge overlap and linkages and working together. We don't have that. So we need to make those linkages. No. On the development squads, yeah, the development squads have been successful, but that model is breaking down as they go up because there's too many different people making decisions. In the development squads, I would make the decisions working with the management. I make the decisions on structure and policy. They make the on-field. It's a bit more higgledy-piggledy as you go up the line. So we just need to tidy it. Great people involved with teams, all doing a brilliant job, but no, there isn't a vision there. There's different messages being given to different teams.
Yeah, so you want to streamline the tactics and the game plan pretty much throughout the different age groups.
Yeah, to a degree, but without putting handcuffs on anyone either, but agreeing on what are the values of Cork hurling and then expressing that on the field, or what are the values of Cork football. What do you see when you see a Cork team go out? You look at other counties, and if you named particular counties, you'd know what Dublin are at in terms of football. You'd know how Kilkenny are at in terms of hurling. Now Tipperary are taking the Kilkenny hurling model if you look at it by their style of play. I look at Cork, and we seem to be caught between styles at all levels. We're doing a bit of version of Donal O'Grady from 2005, but then people are a bit unhappy with that, so every now and again we change from it. I would say the players are confused, to be honest.
Yeah, it's just difficult, you know. You say if Kingston comes in, for example, and he says this is the way I want Cork playing, and then that's, you know, replicated throughout the development squads and everywhere, and then Kingston has a disastrous year with the senior team, you know, that's thrown into disarray, torn up, and then you're starting again, you know. So I'm not sure whether that's really workable or not.
It is, as long if you don't over define it. Of course, if you go down to real minute tactics, and those tactics don't work, but I'm talking more values, having forwards who can win their own ball. That's a fundamental. You could say it's a form of a tactic, but that will be, you know, that will be the case forever. Having more aggressive club games, more loosely refereed games, more aggressive players coming through. That's another value. That leads into tactics then. So Kieran Kingston would have a choice of tactics based on this vision coming from below. But you are correct, and that's the model we have at the moment, is the manager goes, strength and conditioning changes, the manager's tactics changes, everything changes. I'd be saying, let's have a bit of consistency. Let's have a director hurling. Let's work with managers. Let's support them, our head coaches in the future, and stop changing this vision every 5 minutes, because that's what we are doing. And if you look at us, we lack that identity now in terms of teams playing us. If you look at other counties, their identity, it's not handcuffed, but there's something going on. If you see Kerry football team, if you see the Kerry minors, they're kicking the same ball the Gooch is going. is kicking, it must be integral to their system.
Yeah, and I suppose there is a value to that. These directors of football and hurling, are these predominantly going to be ex-players, or are they going to be, you know, professionals with a business background that can look after the business side, you know, the marketing side, that kind of thing? Are they going to be ex-players who are just going to focus purely on, you know, what you're talking about there, the playing side of things?
The priority is coaching. So I'd hope, again, that we wouldn't get too bureaucratic on it, that their terms of reference, that their expertise would be in coaching. They're ex-players, that's always a benefit because that adds to your coaching repertoire. But I wouldn't put any restrictions on it yet because it's too soon. I put out terms of reference. They're basically heading up coaching rather than business. So they would need that, a little bit of that expertise, but I wouldn't restrict it. What they would need to be early on is, given that the fact that you will be taking a bit of a risk with the first appointment and going into the role, and we'd still be learning about it, they'd want to have a thick skin, they'd want to be independent thinkers, and they'd want to be recognised and respected by people too, you know, because there's a fair bit of flack goes if you stick your head above the parapet in Cork, in either hurling or football, you'd want to have a thick skin.
Yeah. How optimistic are you that, you know, you won't get all 25 through, I wouldn't think, but, you know, the main important ones, how optimistic? I suppose the power is with the clubs now.
I've mood swings every now and again. When I think of GA bureaucracy and I think of votes and motions, I get a bit sad, and then I go out and I get a phone call from someone who's training an under-8 team or an under-10 team somewhere all across the country, and they're saying, we're on the road, we're going to make changes. So I'm caught a little bit between the two. I'd be very positive, and I think there's a window now in terms of where the Cork teams are at, and that people, there's nobody in Cork in the last few weeks saying we don't have a problem. There's nobody saying we can't change structures. So it's just trying to harness that. You know it yourself in your own reservations about inter-county competitions and how you have to wade through the GA structures to get change. I'd be positive. I wouldn't be saying it otherwise. But yeah, I've been to my share of meetings where you're thinking at the end, will we ever get anything done? So a bit of perspective, but no, positive, all right, because clubs want it. And there are several clubs texting me now by the hour since in the last 24 hours saying, oh, I got onto the chairman, we're having a meeting next week to discuss the document.
Yeah,
my
issue with county boards is that, you know, they're amateurs running professional organisations, with the exception of Dublin, who completely have their house in order. But, you know, you're bringing in directors of football and hurling without that professional background to be able to help, you know, drive the county board forward, you know, increase revenue, increase funding, all things like that. That is just going to be pretty much continue on without the county board driving the funding and, you know, the marketing and the commercial side of things. You know, funding these new director of hurling and rugby, you know, or director of hurling and football roles, while it looks great on paper, it's not really going to change anything.
Yeah, but if you want, I'll give you another 25 proposals on governance structures. And I met John Costello 6 months ago and discussed the Dublin model with him from top to bottom and saw all the corporate side and saw all the professional people that they have on board. But this is tackling coaching issues really as such. Yes, there's governance issues, but we do have a CEO. We do have a senior administrator. You know, we do have a treasurer.
Yeah.
Maybe the next treasurer will be a full-time financial officer. So these roles are there. If you're saying it's not working, well, then we need to look at how the roles are being carried out. So I wouldn't say it's as naive maybe as you make it sound, but if how long do you want the document to go? When it's going to clubs first, I'd be up to 100 pages if I covered all the bases you're talking about. I'm well aware of the context of what you're saying. You're right. You need a professional approach too. But I don't want to make a director of hurling a professional appointment who was never at a match, you know. So
yeah,
it's that balance. Those people are out there.
You say you're meeting Geraldine to discuss this. How do you expect that meeting to go? You know, you're proposing some major changes to how he does business and how Cork County Board does business. Do you expect him to be receptive?
I'll wait and see. I can't speak for someone else. So I got a call from George today and he said he'd like to meet me sometime in the next week. And I said, brilliant, so we're meeting in the morning. I said, as soon as possible. I'm not afraid to put ideas in front of anybody, any place. But I hope he will. I hope he will. And I hope that he is recognising the disillusionment coupled with a desire for change that is on the ground. I hope he recognises that. If he doesn't, well, then we'll have to look at how things go after that.
All right, Kevin. We'll be looking forward to seeing how that meeting goes and seeing how successful you are. I'm sure other counties will be looking on with interest. Kevin O'Donovan, thanks for talking to us.
Thanks, lads. Keep up the good work. Thanks a million.
Yeah, I don't know, Conal, what you think about all that. There was so much in it. But one thing that jumps out at me is the idea of this Cork way, and that the development squads, the minors, the under-21s and the seniors all play the same way. Like, it sounds great. It's like Barcelona-esque. Yeah. But, I mean, is it practical?
Well, first of all, fair play to him for putting that together.
Yeah.
It's taken him absolute weeks to do. But and having the boss to stand up in a meeting and give it out,
yeah,
that's another thing.
With Frank Murphy staring at him.
But, yeah, look, after reading it, it's all sounds great in theory, you know. But whether you can really implement a game plan from, say, under 14 all the way to senior, I don't know. You have to really look at the players that you have and try and adapt a game plan towards that. You can't force a game plan on lads. And I know Cork have a certain style that they had years ago, but I don't know if it's in that modern game, you know, if it's the winning way to do it. I'm not sure. But look, Cork are in a bit of turmoil at the moment. Whether it's the injuries or the players or the management, you know, who knows what's really happening down there.
Yeah, they don't seem to be themselves at all. They've just completely gone flat. And it's interesting enough, myself and Mikey were looking at it, like, there's so many of the players that were involved in 2014 when they won the Munster title. You wonder, like, the one thing about Cork whenever they lose, it's like the structures are wrong. And, you know, Donal Logue was on the Sunday game saying, we haven't done it. Like, it's like the manager, Kingston's getting a free ride here. Like, there's nobody even questioning, well, this fella has taken over a team that won Munster. They were a puck of a ball away from winning the All-Ireland the year before. And now they're a shambles. And, like, the debate is not about, you know, whether the manager is getting the best out of that group of players. It's more about the bigger picture of Cork.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure too much about the underage structure, but if you looked at even the Dublin game, you know, some of the stuff they were doing was headless. You know, having pot shots from their own half back line. Okay, you can have two or three maybe, but every ball seemed to be, you know, lumped in, going miles wide, and young Cadigan inside absolutely on fire, and they wouldn't give him the ball. You know, it was good for a Dublin point of view, but, you know, I probably would have been really exposed. Cork would have been really exposed if Dublin actually nicked it on the night. You know, there would have been a huge hullabaloo. But
yeah, that's actually interesting that you say that, because we talked to JJ Delaney, and this was a criticism he had of Galway, and he's taken pot shots, and loads of counties do it, and I've never played hurling, so it's interesting to me. Like, every county's guilty of it. He says he's marking Joe Canning. Joe Canning makes a run, he's got 4 yards on him, and they clear it long and go for a point, and JJ's like, thank God, because I was caught there. But he says the one team, Tipperary, when Callanan makes a run, he's hit with a good, but you know what I mean? That's the difference. Galway's taking pot shots, Cork taking pot shots. Surely that's not too hard to coach out of a team. Say, like, we've got a dangerous man in there.
Yeah, look, I think it can be hard to coach out of a team.
Can it?
Because if you have good lads that are used to doing it for their club, you know, and 9 times out of 10 they probably get it with their club, but, you know, you get a bit of rush of blood to the head, you get a yard of space, and you think, you know, I'm going to be a great man here if I put this over from 70 yards.
Yeah.
But ultimately, you know, the likes of Joe Canning and Callan inside, well, Callan may be a different story, but if you make 2 or 3 runs and you're not getting the ball, you know yourself, you're like, oh, what's the point? Like, I'm not going to get it. So I'll try and maybe get that. If it drops short, I'll just stay inside. So, look, you have to look at Kilkenny on the other side of it. You know, I think a lot of ball is lumped in straight on top of them.
Yeah.
But any time that, say, Owen Larkin or Conor Fenley makes a run, they get the ball. So, are the halfbacks line, it may look like they're absolutely just bombing it in, but I think they have a little look first to see what's on, and if it's not on, then you can lump it in. You know, I don't believe in just lumping it in straight away.
That's not something that needs to be trained from the age of 6 onwards. You don't need this... you know, this grand vision for Cork hurling for a team to be coached to, you know, not play in wasteful ball, not take a pot shot from 80 yards when you've got a free man inside.
Yeah, and I think especially any hurler growing up or even footballer knows if there's a fella on fire inside, you feed him the ball, you don't take a pot shot of 50-50 out from 60 yards, especially in a championship game. You know, there was so much space, especially if you're going back to young Callaghan that night, there was so much space for him inside. Just pop it, you know, 10 or 15 yards in front of him, he would have got it and rounded his man, which he did a couple of times, you know, but luckily they didn't feed him enough.
That's one thing about Cork as well, and it's tactically, they play a sweeper, they don't play a sweeper. When they play a sweeper, Waterford play a sweeper, but Waterford flood the middle third. So there's, you know, you're under so much pressure, you're going to give it to the sweeper. But Cork play one, put no pressure out the field, and then they're giving in nice ball, and the sweeper's completely redundant. And it just looked, every time I look at Cork, I'm like, you know, not a hurling analyst, but this is not right. This is not working, lads.
Yeah, like, I think if the big guns inside, you know, don't start shooting out the lights, they're under serious pressure, you know.
Yeah.
But look, a lot of pressure is on some of the senior lads there to really perform him. You know, I don't think he really performed this year to the highest level. But look, it wasn't too long ago when as you said, that they were in a puck of ball of winning All Ireland, you know. So yeah. How has it gone so bad in the space of 2 or 3 years? I have no idea what's
happening. It's the underage. I'm telling you, that's it.
Or else JBM is actually a hurling genius.
Yeah, well, he
had this group of players performing at the absolute optimum for two or three years.
The thing about Jimmy Barry Murphy, and I've never trained under him, and Dalo, I've never trained under him, but to be Mick O'Dwyer type, there's just larger than life characters, and tactically they mightn't be geniuses, but you go with them. And one quality of a manager is going with them. If you have them on side and you look at your manager after a game and you go, if your heart breaks for them because they put in such an effort and you know they're in it for the right reasons. That maybe not Mikko.
Did he get rid of you as well?
No, he just left. No, he dropped me for his last year. Pretty much got rid of me. But but that's the managers that you want, like these larger than life characters that are able to bring a team above, you know, the sum of their parts.
Look, I think there's so much made of tactics like nowadays, but ultimately, as Daly was used to always say to us, tactics can go out the window. It's just go for the ball and win your own ball. And you can nearly hear little synopsis of what Brian Cody was saying. Everyone has to win their own ball.
Yeah.
And then you can talk about tactics. Because you can talk tactics till you're blue in the face. But if you don't have the ball, sure, you're chasing around after the ball all the time. So, look, I think we can overanalyze things too much as well. But, you know, maybe the Cork lads are just a little bit, as you said, maybe they're a little bit burnt out from what they had. Or maybe they're just not being training hard enough or whatever the case is, but there's certainly something needs to be looked at there from a doing point of view. I don't mind it, it's grand.
Yeah, you're grand. Let them waste away. We'll forget about this, rip up this report. Alright, hope all you hurling snobs listening know the GAAR has a football show as well.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
All right, another county coming off a second poor season in a row, but they don't have any underage issues, is Limerick, and I'm delighted to say we have Shane Dowling on the line. Shane, you're out of the championship on the 9th of July. That wasn't in the script.
No, definitely not. We're only talking about coming home, and the years don't be long adding up now as well. And I suppose, you know, I was somewhat lucky in terms of I was with the club up until the 17th of March, and I came back, I suppose, 2 or 3 weeks after that. So, in one sense, I was fortunate, but for the other boys, I mean, they were back training in the middle of October. To be doing all that training, the volume of training they done to get one championship win is extremely disappointing, really.
Yeah, it's extremely disappointing, but have you any reasons why it was such a disappointing year?
I don't really. I suppose when you look back on it, they seem to be flying in the league. They met Clare, and whatever you look at against Clare, they were beating 4 points with a man down, and I suppose it wasn't the end of the world when you see what Clare went on to do in the league, beating Tipperary and going on to win the league. So there was positives there, even though you didn't win it, essentially, but I suppose when we went down to play, we had a good win against Dublin. Now, as it turns out, obviously Dublin didn't hold up the form. They had a very disappointing year as well.
Yeah.
And obviously against Waterford, I mean, the second half was very, very disappointing, to say the least. I against Tipperary, you know, we were only beating 4 points. Performance wasn't there. There was only snippets of form throughout the year. Why, I don't know. Because, I mean, in terms of commitment and from everyone, it was just the commitment that was there was unbelievable. There was young bodies brought in, fresh voices, everything, and it's hard to put the finger on, really.
Yeah, because I suppose if the training was good, maybe you're confused tactically or something. It's kind of, you know what you associate with Limerick when they're going well is a kind of a raw passion. That didn't seem to be there.
It didn't, and I suppose, listen, the one thing I always say is this, you know, if you don't play well, you know, no one can ever go out and say, I'm going to play a good game, because you don't know which way it's going to go. The one thing you can do is you can say, listen, I'm going to have that raw passion that Limerick are associated with, and there's no excuse for not having that. And again, there was only snippets of that this year compared to previous years where, I mean, the crowd are all of the thing with Limerick too. When Limerick teams are going well, the crowd gets behind them, and I don't know, it just wasn't there this year. Why, I don't know. Maybe, I suppose, we trained very hard. Did you overtrain a small bit? I don't know. It's something that we're going to have to look at, because I suppose the last 2 years have been disappointing, really.
Yeah, and you know, TJ Ryan is saying after the match that he's taken Limerick as far as he could, and he subsequently stood down. Did it get a little bit stale maybe under him, and maybe that's why the passion wasn't there?
I don't think stale is the right word. As well as the players, TJ came in for criticism. I wouldn't have anybody have a bad word to say about TJ to me. He gave 13 years of service as a player. He gave the last 3 years, like the work that he has put in, I've seen it firsthand myself.
It has been
incredible, and I really mean that, because listen, whether TJ has done right or whether he's done wrong, and I told him myself, there's times I haven't agreed with him, but I have never questioned what he was doing. Anything he has done, whether I've agreed with him or not, in his mind, in his head, it was for the best interest of Limerick hurling. And as far as anyone can be aware of that's fine to me. Once he does something and you know it's in his interest for the best of Limerick hurling, that's fine to me. I thoroughly enjoyed working under him. I really did. For me, I've always said it, managers get too much credit when a team wins. They get too much abuse when a team loses. Players play. There's 15 players in the field. TJ wasn't playing any of them games. No, obviously things have to be done right as well, and he did do things right. But you know, his 3 years were up. He'd done 3 years. You know, I suppose maybe it was time for a fresh voice to try new things, I suppose.
Yeah, and you need that fresh voice, you know, because you did get a lift when, you know, John Allan came in. You know, then you got a lift in TJ Ryan's first year, where you almost beat Kilkenny. It's almost like Limerick might need a new manager every year.
Well, if you look at the records, the amount of managers Limerick have had,
well, you nearly have
two or so, and you'd nearly have a team of 15 at this stage if you had them all together. I don't know. Is that the reason? I really don't know. Like, who's going to come in now? I suppose it's down to 3 or 4 people really at most. And I suppose Joe O'Connor was there as physical coach. He was fantastic this year. A new manager, a new coach, and I suppose a couple of selectors. It's what's needed now. It's what has to be done, and hopefully the best will be got.
You're a bit of an enigma down there. You're a little bit like the Galway hurlers, as in you, on your day you can beat anyone. What do you think a manager needs to have to get the best out of you?
The way things have gone, right? Like, everyone knows how serious the game has gone. The work that's required. You know, there has to be a line too, I think, myself. You know, there needs to be that seriousness, but the players that are with Limerick now are prepared to do anything.
Yeah.
There's no question about that. Whatever we're told to do, we'll do to the best of our ability. But I think there just needs to be a line of having a bit of crack too, or I think that's, you know, if people aren't enjoying themselves, they're not going to perform well. I'm not saying players didn't enjoy themselves this year. They did. Anytime, as far as I'm concerned, I put on a green jersey, I enjoy myself, and I'm honoured to do it, really. What does the manager need to have? God, I don't know. Listen, John Allan was fantastic. I enjoyed my time with Don O'Grady. He was there. TJ was no different. Like, he had everything, but just a good hurling coach. You know, managers nowadays, they just manage the situation. If the hurling coach is probably a priority as far as I'm concerned.
You say you need a hurling coach. That's kind of, you look back to 2013 and the job that John Allan did. We're talking about a fresh voice. Because what you didn't need there was a change of management. If what would you think if John Allan had stayed on? Do you think that team would have progressed more? And that's not knocking TJ. It's just to say the progression and the vision that you had in 2013 could have continued.
Yeah, but listen, when you're in Limerick, for whatever reason with this county, you can't win. I mean, John Allan won a Munster in 2013 in his second year for the first time in whatever it was, 17 years. Then down then to play Clare and Mallard in the semi-final, didn't go to plan. I'm sure John Allan's the best time, but according to the people, according to the public, you know. And I don't know the people. Do players listen to that kind of pressure that comes on? No different to kind of, I suppose, Galway. Do they listen to the outside views? I know, you know, you definitely hear them. You're sure, why wouldn't you hear them? You're around Limerick every day, you're going to be hearing these things, but you can't leave them affect you, because if you do, that seeps into your mindset then, and then you start believing what other people think, and then it kind of gets messy. So I don't know, is a fresh voice essential? But I think a bit of continuity is important as well.
Yeah, it's interesting you talk about a coach there and not a manager, because I think that's always something that's confused in the GAA, definitely with teams I've been on, as in you have a manager and he's managing the team, picking the team, but he's often not capable of getting on the training field and, you know, coaching a game plan, telling you what way he wants you to play, not necessarily the way you've always played. You know, be strong enough a character to tell you, right, I don't want you doing this, I want you doing this. That there's never really a separation in a lot of counties in Ireland with between management and coaching, because they're two completely different skill sets.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Willie. Like, I suppose we'll just take, for example, because I know about it with Clare 2013, right? Obviously, David Fitz is manager, and he obviously done very well, right? But Paul Kinnock was a training coach. You speak to any of the Clare players to tell you that Paul Kinnock was if Paul Kinnock wasn't there, they wouldn't have won it, basically, right? Yeah. What they were saying that year. So, and he was their hurling coach. So, sometimes managers are fantastic at managing, and sometimes the best coaches in the world would be the worst managers. You know what I mean? There's definitely a line there. And I think a hurling coach, the way things have gone, especially in Limerick, I think a good hurling coach is extremely essential. You know, and a manager essentially manages things, deals with all loads of different things, but on the training ground, the new going on training, it's the hurling coach takes over, and I think that's very important.
Sounds like you might have someone in mind there, would you? There's a few names, obviously, already in the hat. These things happen quickly. You got the likes of John Kiely, Andy Daly, Shane O'Neill, who you'd know well. Would one of those men fit the bill?
I think any of them names would fit the bill. John Kiely, I've worked with him since I was 11, 12 and 13. He was actually the hurling coach when our under-21s won the Munster under-21 against Cork in the Gaelic Rounds in 2011, and then he was a selector under John Allen for the following 2 years. Serious time for him, great fella. And obviously his CV speaks for himself. Anthony Daly, obviously his CV speaks for himself too. He's been around the game, around the management area for a long number of years. He's obviously been involved at Limerick for a couple of years. I don't know, I'd imagine he has been doing that underage structure for the last number of years with a bigger vision. I could be wrong, but I'd imagine that's what he's looking at. And obviously Shane as well, whether he do it or not, I don't know. He seems to be enjoying his time in the PhD at the minute.
There's a lot of talk this week about visions and plans and such long-term views, talking about Cork. Are you happy with the way things are in Limerick, that, you know, what Anthony's doing there? You've got Sporting Limerick, you know, well funded, it seems to be well thought out. Do you think the building blocks are there for a successful Limerick senior hurling team?
Well, funnily enough, everything is there. Joe McKenna is kind of an unsung hero in that he has put an underage structure in place for the last 5 years. That's obviously been reaping the rewards with the minors coming out to the 21s. The Limerick colleges, I know there's different players from different counties as well, but still the Limerick colleges with Limerick players are winning Fitzgibbons. But the minors and the 21s have been winning, obviously with the club winning the other than this year. Everything is there. The players are there. We just need things to fall right. That's all. In 2014, things fell right. We were very unfortunate not to get to an All-Ireland final. In 2013, we were very unlucky not to get to an All-Ireland final. The players are there. The structure is right. Small bit of luck with things going right, I can guarantee you we won't be far away.
Yeah, and that's the
why this should, why this should happen. Things didn't work out for whatever reason, and I know people laugh at me if they hear that, saying, geez, we're miles off it. And do you know what, this year we probably were miles off it. But I'm saying that if everything is going right and we get on a run, we could be hard to stop. Maybe that's just hope talking, maybe we don't see the players. That's just my opinion.
What are you doing with yourself this weather? Are you back with the clubs, or is club championship starting straight away?
Well, like that, it could be a very, very short year for me now. If with the next round of games on the weekend of the 18th of August, we're playing South Liberties. We've two games left, South Liberties and Ballybrown. But the big game of that weekend is Ballybrown versus Doon. If Ballybrown beat Doon, we're gone.
Right.
Very simple. Yeah, so it could be an early year for me. But listen, I suppose because of being with Limerick, and if you were led in the same boat the last 18 months, 24 months, I've been on the go full stop. So, no, I'd be Sky scanner now and low cost all his daddy is what I'd be looking at next couple of days, trying to get the hell out of here for a week or 10 days and relaxing.
Yeah, well, listen, all the best with it anyway, Shane. Thanks for talking to us.
Yeah,
Shane.
Cheers for the call. Thanks, guys. All right, take care.
Yeah, Shane Dowling, due a holiday, straight through to March with the club, then into the county. Conal, you know all about that. It's not easy.
No, it's not easy. I can see where he's coming from, but when you get a defeat like that, you know, you look at Everton and you think, oh geez, I am tired, and you know, I wasn't really playing that well. But yet, if he won the last day, you know, Everton would be great, and you know, you don't need to train hard during the winter. You know, just keep playing games at your club; it's great. So there's a fine balance, but I can see where he's coming from. Now looking back, saying maybe we trained very hard, and you know, it's very hard to keep going year after year, you know, and produce the goods when needed.
Yeah, and we'll have to keep our eye out. Your former manager Dalo, who you obviously rate so highly, I personally, I think he's a banker for that job. He's in the system already. He's involved with the minors. You know,
he's keen to get back into it, you think?
Keen to get back into it. And Conal, that is an attractive job. That is a good, solid, Munster-winning team with a sprinkle of All-Ireland under-21s. Like, who wouldn't want that job?
Yeah, I don't know.
They are a bit mad down there as well.
I'm sure that he'd fit in well down there. But no, like, he's involved with the minors, I believe, you know. But whether his heart would really be in it, I don't know, you know. Certainly when he was with Dublin, you know, he was a real dub, you know. He was up here all the time, you know, he was around clubs. Dublin was, we felt, you know, Dublin was nearly more important to him than Clare was at the time. So I don't know, you know. It'd be a shame for if anything ever happened with Dublin that we couldn't get him back, you know.
Right.
Because if he goes with Limerick, he's probably gone for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
But look, Daly's not stupid either, you know. He's around a long time. He knows the game. So I just wait the next couple of months and see what happens.
Yeah, and it's very close to Clare as well, which might, you know, if at least when he's in Dublin, he doesn't have the, you know, the chance of those swords clashing too often. Whereas down there, he's right on the border.
Yeah, there are a lot of vocal Clare hurling folk who might take umbrage with him. Too,
yeah, those border clubs might never speak to Dalo again. I'm sure he's hugely popular. All right, up next, we're going to talk to Austin Gleeson about silent cuts. Yeah, so he was at it again last night, lads, scoring a sideline cut when the Waterford under-21s absolutely hammered Clare. I spoke with him last week and I asked him about how much practice he does in them.
I think knowing you, very little.
Yeah, I suppose when I started kind of doing it, was just kept happening for me, I suppose. And like, it all kind of started just messing around up in the club field, a couple of lads like just over on the far side of the field. Maybe when the seniors are training and we have a big game, I could be just up there watching the lads and just start messing around, hitting sidelines and stuff, and just start going over, and I just kept trying it, and then it started working in matches. And then I think the more, I actually think at the start of the year I over practiced, because I kind of hit them, they kind of go, kind of curl.
Yeah, natural,
left to right. Yeah, and that just seems to happen naturally to me. But the more I kind of practiced them, they used to just go up and straight back down, which wasn't working out for me. So
yeah.
I put a bit of practice into them, but I won't put as much as I was at the start of the year now, and they're actually starting to kind of come off a small bit more again, and I'm starting to just natural kind of flow of left to right and come back into them again now. So
okay,
just happens, I suppose.
And do you have a range that you want, if there's one certain distance out, you go, okay, no, that's too far out, or will you know, do you know your range for the cuts?
Suppose,
or if you catch them clean, is it going to go over from anywhere?
If I catch them clean, I suppose maybe the 65, I'd say, was
really
would be close enough to what I'd say. But if I suppose the ones that feel a lot confident would probably be 50, 55, 50 yards out, maybe. Kind of, I'd always believe that I could put it over, and then if it was a bit further out, I'd kind of look at it and see what I believe in myself, and if I don't, either try and lob it in or try and figure out something else.
Yeah. Do you think it should be worth 2 points? Because there's not many teams have lads able to do it. And if you have that ability, you know, why should it be the same as a tap over free from 14 metres?
But it's gut-wrenching enough, kind of, because I've seen it happen against us. Like, it's gut-wrenching enough when an opposition player puts the ball over the bar, that it's, Jesus, he just done that. Like, there's no one safe. Like, you can't inflict the ball out over the sideline. It was like a free nearly at this stage. But and then add 2 points onto it, maybe it could be totally deflating on a team, maybe. But from a personal point of view, I'd love if it were 2 points, obviously, because I'm after getting last couple of years, like, and if there were 2 points, like, it could help, could benefit the team, and it could come down to it, a point or two in either side, like, and if the sideline was able to help, obviously I'd love them to be 2 points, and I'd always kind of try and go for them. But maybe if they did introduce the 2 points, no one would be doing short sidelines anymore. Everyone from 65 yards would be trying to put it over in a way,
and slowing
the game totally down, maybe in a way that way as well. So just kind of, there's pros and cons about it, and that's the main thing that's going to look at if they're ever going to consider bringing it back in again.
Surely there should be some reward for having a specialist like that in your team.
Yeah, look, it's incredible skill to see a lad, you know, 50 or 60 yards out, putting it down on the side of a side of the pitch, and absolutely flying it over, you know, nearly the net behind, you know. So, yeah, I think there should be more given to it. You know, it definitely would warrant more than a point or a top over free, as you said, in the 14. But on the other side of it, you know, you have clubs in other counties looking at this going, let's have a shot from everywhere. But not every team has the player of ability to be able to do that, you know. And a lot of, 9 times out of 10, it'll either drift wide or go straight to the person in front, which is nearly on the other team. So a lot of times, especially when we were playing, is, you know, if you're not going to put the thing over and you're not 100% sure, let's play a fast back or play a fast to somebody. So
that goes against what I used to do when I was playing hurling, which was whoever was nearest the ball would have a go at it. Yeah, you know, getting it as close to the goal as possible. And that was pretty much the aim. And if it went over, never. Great. And if it went 20 yards away from you, that was great. And anything after that was a bonus.
Yeah.
So obviously, as you know, hurling tactics develop and team and skills improve, you do actually think about sideline cuts.
Yeah, you do. You do. Like, even with the club, you know, there's a couple of lads that always fancy themselves, you know, when they either duff it or it goes 3 yards, and you see them, like, they could be playing full forward and coming out, running out to midfield, you know, trying to take a sideline. Stay in there. Like, you're not even going to hit it that far. So
it slows everything down then.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
Yeah, it's like Kieran MacDonald when he was playing with Mayo. Like, wherever he was in the field, if there was a free in midfield, he was taking it.
Yeah.
And like, you have to drop the ball and wait for him, and he looked great. But the defence had set back up at this stage by the time he's doing it. So that never really works. I just have a thing about it, though. 65 metres out, a flat hurl. Mm. Like, I wouldn't put it over with a golf club. And like, I mean, you know, you've Gleeson, who's doing it on a regular basis, and Joe Canning, who does it on a regular basis. Gleeson reckons his 65 is his limit. But like, I mean, I'm not sure if it is. Like, it's something about the way they catch it flush on the ground that just... Yeah, comes look, flush off
it's
the
just hurt. It's just a skill that you have to develop, I think, from early age, you know, and you have to keep practicing When I came first underage at Dublin, you know, that was one of the skills I used to love doing, because you could always get a good distance on it. But when I went playing football and came back, I can hardly hit the ball out of my way now at the sideline. So it's a skill that you need to keep at, and not many people have the actual knack to do it. You know?
Hurling is obviously, we love it because of the speed of it and, you know, the hand-eye coordination, etc., etc. But that is the one static skill in the game that you could just look at, and it's jaw-dropping to watch him do it. But one thing that kind of gets ignored is the fact that free-taking has come on to the point now where, you know, you just assume anything within 80 yards of the goal, any inter-county free-taker is going to put over. That's changed in 20 years as well, hasn't it? Free has become almost a gimme point.
Yeah, no, it has. Like, I think it, with every manager, they'd say now, no, you know, you can't foul inside the half, because any inter-county player that's worth a salt, or any inter-county team that's worth a salt, has a good free-taker and will put it over.
The balls are lighter, are they? You get more distance on them now.
Yeah, well, I'd say, you know, the old O'Neills were very thick, you know, while now a lot of teams you'll see are playing with the own Kellys. You know, they're very small and they're like rockets. So if you hit the ball flush, it's going a distance.
What was it Donald Logue used to do? He had loads of light balls in the net or something. They weren't the same balls
as those old Cork All-Stars.
Oh yeah, really, and he's driving them a mile.
Yeah, driving them a mile. Like ping pongs. Yeah.
See, there
that Cork, should be in the development
Cork,
plan.
Cork, I've shown you the development plan. More Donald Logues in the goals with lighter balls. All right, that's it for today. Thanks to Conan, Mikey and Evan for putting the show together. Thanks, Conal, for coming in. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at sportsjoe_GAA, and most importantly, subscribe to us on iTunes. Just search for the GAA Hour on iTunes and you'll see us there. Rate us as well. Oh, point to note, we don't have a show on Monday. There's obviously no games going on at the weekend. So we'll be back with Conal next Thursday to preview the All-Ireland quarterfinals. All right, good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I should go. So
we're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.